Beauty Unplugged, the podcast. Welcome. I have an amazing woman with me today in my podcast. And I'm saying hi to Christine.
Hi, thank you for inviting me here today.
Christine is the founder and CEO of WIN. And for all of you who haven't heard of that, I will definitely put the link underneath our podcast so you can have a look. It's one of those amazing events. And I can say it personally because I have been three times. I checked it. I went in 2013, 14, and 16. And it's one of those conferences for women where I came out all three times, let's just say 20 centimeters taller, where I felt a little bit better in my shoes, where I felt encouraged, empowered, to do more, to jump higher, to try more. And Christine is the founder of that. She is the reason why all that happened. And the first question I wanted to ask Christine is, so the WIN started in 1997. How did that happen?
Yeah. Oh, thank you, Anya. Yeah, it was in some ways, it was a gradual process. I had come from Norway and I went to live in Italy, and I was working in a big bank, which was interesting. And at the same time, there was times when I was questioning how one could even be more included. I wasn't actually so concerned with gender at the time. I felt more there was not enough intergenerational work. I felt the young people weren't heard well enough, and I started to question that. And likewise, when I left the bank, I started to work as a consultant teaching marketing, which had been my degree, and I had worked on that. And I worked a lot in Eastern Europe. I traveled to Bulgaria, Russia, many countries, and then I started to travel also other countries on the planet. And I started to see that so many places people didn't have choice, and particularly not all women. And of course, I knew it in some ways. I'd always known that, but I started to really interact with women, talk to them, see them, and really feel this. And then I realized I had been very lucky also, because I traveled because I wanted to travel. I could stay back in Norway if I wanted to, but I had choices. And then back in Milan, I was also very active in an international women's group. And that was so much fun. I was the president. And when I felt a bit underemployed in my bank, I had joined that association and been very active and felt I could really use myself there and good practice in speaking in front of people, running meetings, and people came from all over the world. And I was so excited. I loved that. And then one day I thought, why don't we do a conference? Because I'd seen this part of the world where women were not always having the freedom and the best of choices. And two, I'd seen the workplaces that I believe could be more inclusive. Mm-hmm. And three, I saw this, all of us as individuals, and how much energy we had when we were in our element, working on purpose and doing things we really liked, and the joy from there. And that was maybe my biggest drive, that I had thought it was so much fun to be with the women too. That became my family, the community of shared purpose and joy. And so it was with those women I said, why don't we do something and invite people from around the world? And at that time too, there were not so many groups for women. Mm-hmm. And I had seen some around the world, and there had been some classic women's associations, but they were speaking German in Germany, Italian in Italy, and so on. But those that had international language and women that were traveling around the world, there were less of. So I put those that I knew together, and we started some other ones, and we invited them all to the first Women International Networking Conference. And the network idea was simply because we put together all those different networks and groups and women. But and then at the first event, I structured it as a framework for change, really, where on the first day we look at what's happening in the world, what are some of the trends out there, and how can we become part of creating those trends ourselves. And then the second part of it was about the future of work and our leadership or careers. And then the third part, you, me, how can we grow and become real self-realized people. And the during those first meetings, I met women that were older than me that had really taken the sort of masculine way on and sacrificed a lot to get where they are. And I, as a young woman, started also to wonder, couldn't there be another way? Because I don't know if I want to be like her, or, you know, this type of thing. And I was also touched by some of them who had given up so much. So we started, on the second year, I started to question, could there be such a thing as a more feminine leadership style? And what could be an authentic path for all of us? And parallel to that, I'd started to study yoga and had also become very active in some study of creativity. I was very active in an acting group in Milano and started to understand that there is, in order to create something, we need to receive and then do. So it's this dance, yin-yang, receptivity, creativity is co-creation, really. And so we need the feminine. And why is that not present in the business life or political life? And
let me just interrupt you, because I find that a lot of people have different definitions of the feminine and the masculine.
Yeah.
And you've used now the feminine way, the phrase, a couple of times. How do you define feminine way, feminine leadership, the feminine way of, I don't know, of running a business, of...
Yeah. And it's, first of all, it's just a definition, and somehow any definition is not never very good. But what I saw was that there was also books I was reading at the time and who have named this for, you can find it in psychology, you can find it in sociology and in different things. But one could say that a more feminine would be receptivity, collaboration, user intuition. And that it is more a networked, collaborative way of being. While the masculine is more hierarchical, goal-setting, action, competition, perhaps. But it is not about woman and man. It's about the feminine, masculine within us that we all have. And living in Italy, I was also quite intrigued, and we had this as a motto and or as a objective in WIN too, that we all should be Renaissance women. And the Renaissance woman, well, we were thinking a woman who can be a little bit of everything, who can be an artist but a scientist, just like Leonardo da Vinci talked about, but he normally talked about men or human, hopefully. So it was that was the drive, and for us to become complete humans that have self-awareness and who can play on those things, but also to give value, because we see still today there has been the part that is about caring, sharing, using our intuition is not valued enough in business and political life, so outside of the house. And this is also the root of a lot of the disasters we have had, not caring enough about nature, not giving value to beauty, giving value to caring for each other and creating context. So you see other people at the workplaces that lose their jobs because they're not creating enough results. But maybe those are the people who created the glue, the context for a good environment where the other people could thrive. So it's put attention to these in order to create a balance. It's not about that is the only way. We need actually a little bit of all. So it's,
Okay.
So that was an exploration that started, and questioning, actually, is there such a way, and could this be possible, and how do we put that into practice?
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, back in 97, 98, you said you basically tried to bring those international network, women networks, together to create a framework for those women to find their voice.
Yes.
Did you, in the early days, have the impression that that worked? Was that difficult? How did that maybe change over the years?
Yes. I think in the early days, there was, it worked actually quite, it worked really well. And there was extreme enthusiasm. And it was very exciting. We had it was a good time. It was all volunteer run, and people were sitting around my kitchen table. We were brainstorming, folding brochures. We used more paper at the time, eating pizza, and you know, it was quite amazing time. And I felt it was a very strong community, which made me thrive. I love to have that group, you know, like family tribe around. And so it was very good. And then, of course, it started to become more and more work because things grew one more time, you know, bigger speakers, and then the companies came along. And what was very interesting period was also that some companies started to talk about diversity and inclusion. And I met one lady from IBM who attended the conference, and she said, oh, we started now doing something called diversity and inclusion. Let's talk. And then she also offered to host one of the conferences in the IBM conference hall. They had a beautiful place in Milano. And then I started to talk to some other companies, and they also started to put this whole aspect of advancing women and creating diverse, celebrating diversity and inclusion. So then we started a whole arm of WIN that was around that. And also we had another day every year on a diversity and inclusion forum that's part of WIN and also inside the big conference. And this way, we started to ask these companies to sponsor, because we see, okay, if you sponsor and send people to WIN, actually your strategy of creating a more inclusive organization and advancing more women can go faster and more rapid. So then the sponsors came along, and I could set up an office. We had staff. And at a certain point, I moved to Switzerland as well. And yeah, so this is how it grew. It grew quite organically, actually, and hand in hand with what was going on. And then this day two of WIN, which is really the future of work and the future of our careers, became very important also for organizations that that we could work with. And we also listened a lot to their needs, a lot of surveys, what works and what doesn't. And so that shaped also the agenda a bit. So.
Mm-hmm. Now, from 1997 to now, 2020, I've just tried to do the math, 23 years later.
23, yes.
23 years later. If you kind of like look back, what would you say were big problems that you had to overcome? What would you say were situations where you struggled, and how did you solve that?
Yes, exactly. It's very interesting. I mean, in some ways, if I was, what can we call it? If you're the type of person who see a glass half empty, it's always been a struggle.
Okay. But you're not that type of person now, are you?
Exactly. So then there was always possibilities. So, because I always saw possibilities, because a lot of what we have worked for wasn't there, you know, it wasn't there before, and that was the exciting part. So, because there wasn't enough women in these roles, because there wasn't a focus on possibilities, because there wasn't a creative approach, because the feminine wasn't there, I was ignited. Because I'm a pioneer, I create the new things, that's what I'm all about. So, that was why this was unbelievably exciting, and I've had like more energy. I could work around the clock, all hours, all time, for years without getting tired, because it was so exciting. And as long as I had a community around me with other excited people, this thing, you know, went off. What I on the other hand also see was that at a certain point it started to become also more of a job. I think when we started to work more with the companies, because suddenly as sponsors, they had more demands and things like that, which is okay. I mean, I also grew as a person. And I trained my team. We have checklist processes, you know, all our organization. I created a very professional organization, and there were not so much standard material at the time. So we created a statistical program for the surveys, created invoice, standard this, standard that. And again, I love doing that too, as inventing all this sort of setup. But then it's also with higher and higher demands, but then at the same time, higher and higher also risk for because it was very hard to get anybody to make contracts for more than 1 year. So let's say our funding came a lot from big companies, and as this got bigger and I had staff and bigger, you know, venues, because people came from 200 people, 300 people, suddenly we had 800 people and you need a plan.
Yeah. So
that was more risk. And then I think also that I was trying all sort of ways. We went to get venture capital. We tried a lot of things. But in some ways, at that time, we were ahead of the game. It's not like today when everybody talks about diversity. Everybody talks about women. So we were very early. So on the one hand, I had an early mover advantage, if you talk this sort of business language, because we were there before everybody. On the other hand, it was also early so that it wasn't seen as a market from a business perspective. So, and Wynn has always been this sort of, yes, I need a business to set up an event and buy coffee breaks, rent a hotel, and so on. And at the same time, it's also an activist organization in some ways, giving space for new ways of doing things, role models, transformation. So we are in this sort of both both things, you know. But I think there were so many interesting things, because one time I had a venue burnt down, another time I had a big center pulled out. You know, so it's been millions of challenges, unbelievably many challenges. And then at the same time, I think what I've learned is also this deep trust that I'm committed to this, and it's sort of needed in the world. And it's a calling beyond me, and it's not about me, it's about all these women, and it's not even about all these women, it's about the entire world that needs the balance of the women and the men, or the feminine and masculine. And sometimes I spend time in the beginning of the year wondering, should I do it again, or should I do it or not? And then when I commit, and then it's like the commitment, then things start falling into place. And I've had a very deep faith that that's how it works. And some years, and then I had the trust is, okay, this year 400 people came, another year 900 people came, another. So you have to also learn to not believe that success is, oh, this year we had 20 sponsors and 1,000 people, another year 300 people and 15. It doesn't matter. I've seen things go a little bit up and down as well. So as long as you really listen to what is emerging and what wants to be created that year or that time, and link your own success to the transformation of the people or who is called that year, without too much attachment to the flashy numbers. You know, it's not about that. Yeah.
I think that's interesting that you stress that, because I think in our world, very often we still define success depending on the income. In your terms now with the conference, how many participants, you know,
yeah,
how much money from the sponsors, how big a hotel, how flashy is everything. That's the success. But what I hear from you is that you really incorporated into your work what you call that feminine part, that...
Yeah.
On one hand, you have the male part, the masculine part, the structure, the checklist, yeah, the organization,
yeah.
You know, this is our goal, let's go for it. And on the other hand, that part in you that trusts and follows the intuition and says, well, we shall see how many women come.
Yeah.
You know, having that faith, the ones that need to be called will,
yeah,
be there.
Yeah.
So you really incorporated that. That sounds lovely. What you haven't mentioned, and I would really like to mention that, we don't just have the Global Wynn Conference,
yeah. Yeah.
But later other Wynn conferences joined.
Yeah.
Can you just talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I will. And I think it's rooted also in the same philosophy. I mean, we had, there were women coming to Wynn from Japan. Mm-hmm. And they said to me, why don't we bring it to Japan? And some coincidences there too. One of our sponsors and good friends and advisory member, Umran Beba at Pepsi, she was sitting next to me at the table at the dinner, and she said, she started to take over the responsibility of Asia. And she said, Japan is my worst market, meaning, mm-hmm, they had hardly no women there. And I said, oh, I just spoke to Teru, you, another Japanese, and we want to do something there. And she said, I can help you also. And then we got, then it happened, and we've done 9 events in Japan over 9 years, which was very much a what we can call a pull, because it was so needed in Japan. And also the Win philosophy fits very well to Japan in some ways, because it's very, also very, what can we call it? The focus on the beauty and on the... it's almost that feminine trait is very big in Japan, and it's very difficult to be a businesswoman in Japan. So it's just how to create change without doing it in this aggressive way, but find a transformative harmony way to do it, which is of course very interesting how to find a solution. Then we had the same in India. There were Indian people coming, so we started to work in India, which was also extremely interesting. It's been also incredible learning journeys to be part of working with these countries, and each country has its own qualities that also expand our mind. And there are people from Europe that have been joining me on these ventures to India and Japan, and then we started to do Nigeria. And these were, and I've done also a couple of small things in the Middle East. So with these events, we have also expanded in a way our own mindset and way of working, and had the chance to go deeper into issues of the patriarchy in India. When I first did an event there, there was a lot of big violent case of this violence on the streets. And we started to look at the value of women and value of things, you know, which is all over the world, but it was expressed in that moment very strongly in India. In Japan, too, all the issue of shame, of women being submissive and having a certain language that are even different than men. But then you see it came out stronger there, but it's all over the world. So it's so there is topics. And then in Nigeria, there was a little... challenges with planning, but then when you are there, the women are so strong in spiritual and emotional intelligence. The presence are so also nurturing in many ways. And so everywhere we go, it's a new expansion and a possibility to learn and do this exchange. And what I think is very interesting, that back in 1997, I wrote down a few pillars that we are working, standing on in our work. So which was, the first one was global, that everything we do at WIN has to be global. So on my team, the speakers, the people that come. And then that has then been just expanding by going to all these countries, because we saw in Japan, it's hard to take days off and travel. In Nigeria, it's very difficult for Nigerians or Africans to get, or many more countries not to get visas to come into Europe. It was easier 20 years ago. It's getting harder and harder. So we see maybe the only way is to go and do things in the local countries. So this is also something we're experimenting with more independent work now. So in Cameroon, we have done an independent event. They are doing it, like TED, they're doing TEDx's, you know.
Wow.
Yeah. This type of thing. So I think that's very, very exciting. So. But it is this thing of, I think what is special with WIN is that what we are teaching or making space for, of the authentic, the feminine, the global, the looking for possibilities, is also part of our operating principles or ways of doing things. And the first years I saw it as, okay, that's the vision, that's what we want to do. And then it's about getting that vision down into an embodiment, really. So it's our way of doing things.
You mentioned it briefly. I just would really like to stress it. You said at the beginning you built those 4 pillars.
Yeah.
What WIN is. Can you just name them for us?
Yeah.
You said one was global.
Yeah, there was more than 4. One is global, and one we call it authentic. So it's about inspiring and encouraging the women to go on their own authentic paths. So also, that's why when at the conference, there are a lot of workshops on find your purpose, find your mission, all these type of things, and trying also to find as authentic women as possible we put on stage, you know, and global different nationalities. And then there is a third principle, we call it wholeness, and that is to get a balance between the feminine and the masculine. And again, most of our work has stressed the feminine because of this lack of balance, but it is wholeness, which is the pillar. And then another one is called interconnectivity, which means that we have a systems approach to and an understanding that how you do everything will impact on everything else. And this is also why we have structured events based on both the world and work and you, and how you are actually part of the world, work and you, and trying to sensibilize people to that understanding. That, and this is easy to see now when we have COVID, for instance, because suddenly it's like, yeah, everything is so quickly around the world. But mm-hmm. And with the climate, we see that. So, but that was one of the pillars. And then another pillar is that on a focus of possibilities. Mm-hmm. And that's something one can train oneself by. You know, if you look in your own living room or somewhere, it's like, oh, where is there an empty space of no furniture? And then you go there, you know? And I put that in there in the early days because I remember so many people complaining, and rightly so in some ways, that, oh, we don't have equal pay, oh, we don't have equal chances, and so on and so forth. That's all true. And let's see what is possible. Is there an empty space? If there's a place where we can go, where there's something new can emerge. And at least if you keep that focus, it's a way also of keeping the hope up. So I think that's been important. And then another pillar is that of pragmatism. So even if we look at, you know, all the possibilities and interconnectivity, but we also, it's not only about creating ideas, but it's also trying to complete what you start. It's about making an idea into form. And at the conference, that's translated into all these hands-on skill-building workshops, connecting with purpose and meeting people with whom you can get something done as well. Mm-hmm. And then there is also a focus on creativity or innovation, which is linked to all the other things, but it is about how can we do something new, perhaps? And that is translated into, when I do the conferences, let's say you are a speaker and or do a workshop, and I will ask you, what's the newest work you're doing? What's the thing you just created or you're most passionate about or something like that? And then you do that. And when many people do that, then also that gives a certain energy and you're allowed to be more creative.
Yeah. And not just allowed to be creative, but you allow yourself to think bigger.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
I think that's what I've seen again and again. I mean, I've just spent 4 days with women who train other women.
Yeah.
And I had the sense that, I mean, they are thinking like that, and I wanted them to think like that. It's like, where do you see yourself? Where are the possibilities? Imagine the world you want to live in. Outside of everything that exists now,
yeah,
go
yeah.
10 years, 20 years, yeah. And now focus on that. And there the creativity and the innovation comes in.
Yeah.
Because now everything is possible.
This is so important. And I remember realizing how difficult it is for many to do exactly that. Because... you see, it's very, and this is also about back to taking responsibility. And this is something, you know, whatever happens, we will like to take a certain responsibility. Of course, there could be things that happen to you. I'm not totally into everything is what you attract. I mean, you can have accidents and things can happen. But still, it's about taking a certain responsibility. And that is sometimes scary. So it's easier to sometimes for some people to say, I can't stand my boss. It's the patriarchal company I work for, or this horrible, you know, my husband is holding me down or whatever, you know. But what if we instead say, what do you really want instead of what you're against? So this is always is back to this opening. Where is an open space? That's the focus. But that request, it's sometimes easier to complain or be against something mm-hmm. instead of for your own freedom.
Yeah.
So if we look at the overall goal is to find our freedom. That's what I discovered, that mm-hmm. So many women don't have freedom. I thought I had, and I also discovered I was also filled with prisons, and I've done my inner journey and continue so for the rest of my life, I'm sure, you know. But it's that we are... To take responsibility, to understand you have freedom to create.
I think I kind of like sum it down to stop being the victim.
Exactly. Yeah.
It sounds harsh. I totally am aware of that. But the way you explained it to, you know, my boss, my husband, my circumstances, stop being the victim.
Stop it.
I mean, take charge of your circumstances.
Yeah.
And see, I mean, this is what I had to learn in the past X years, to how can I make the best and the most of the cards I was dealt.
Yeah.
You know, how can I make them work for me?
Yeah.
And that, if you stop being the victim, you're being in charge. And now what can I change?
Exactly.
Okay, look for a new job. Then, change the exactly. husband.
Yeah.
We talked about the problems that you have over those 23 years, the challenges you work through. And like I said, I've seen you on stage as the competent, as the as the grounded. This is how I perceive you, the grounded person, the one who knows herself, who can hold the space, even with 800 people. Mm. Not everybody can do that. But Christine, where do you go to, or who do you go to, or what strategy do you have when things are tough?
Yeah.
Things are, the house is burned down.
Yeah, exactly.
Where do you find, or how do you pick yourself up?
Yeah, this is a good question, and it's interesting because I thought, like, it's interesting this whole journey, because I've had a lot of chances to practice exactly that, picking myself up. And I was thinking the other day, I was working on writing something, and I was thinking about how many women have, there's so many strong women around at the moment. And why are they strong? Yes, because they have gone through seemingly impossible odds and picked themselves up on so many, many so many times had to do that. What I realize is, so first of all, I'm very dedicated to my mission. And it's funny, some of it is almost on an automatic. I'm super committed to that, which is, so that is a commitment that goes beyond a smaller and bigger up and down challenges. So that's, I think, is very important. And I don't know why I'm like that, but that's just how it is. But there are all these other challenges of losing your favorite team member, or not favorite, but someone who really helped you, to the burning down of a venue, to not finding funding, or someone canceling, or all of those things. Or I have a lot of, I meditate a lot. I am doing a lot of yoga. I go for walks. I've done a lot of work on my own self-awareness, so, and I can ground myself, and you know, so I have practices like that, and that really helps. And I think every day meditating, even walking meditation, be aware of that. Those things, I think, are very important. And then also reach out to have some good friends, have people you talk to. And then even for me to go home to Norway is also for me a very grounding place to go to. I feel, even if I'm all traveling the world, and sort of in some ways I realize maybe I'm a typical Viking woman, you know, that you travel the world, but then you go back home and you ground yourself. And I'm also, even if I live abroad for many years, I do go home. I visit my family a lot, actually, and that's important to me. So I think it's this having daily routines, whether you do sport or a combination of that and meditation or practices that keep you actually a little bit so you're connected to something that's bigger than you, so it's not only about you. Making sure you have a social network, and it doesn't need to be so many. I mean, I know a lot of people, but it's also important that you have the 2, 3, 4 friends around you, you know, or even one that you can talk to all the time. And I think that's very important. And then your family or nature. Like, so for me, it's either nature in Norway, I'm on the coast, the quartz, the rocks, the sea, the openness. It's also, then or in the mountains too, you realize you're just small because the mountain's so big, and these type of things help as well. Mm-hmm. And then, and then you have to breathe through everything. You have to breathe, you know, and breathe and stay grounded. And those things are like really, feel your feet on the ground, like I say at the wind in the opening, or feel the feet, you know, like there are roots underneath, and you stay. And somehow also develop your intuition, I think, is important. I have spent quite a lot of time on that. I realized in the beginning that, oh, I sense things, I feel things, and I ignored it. But no, I'm actually not at all ignoring that. That's my compass. That's my navigation tool, really. So and giving more and more respect to that and setting more and more boundaries for what's not good and what's mm-hmm. good. So that's important. And journaling, of course, journaling. So it's you and the page, you know, that's a very important one. Yeah.
It's interesting. A lot of things that you mentioned, I can tick the boxes.
Yeah.
And in one of my last conversations, I had Gerlinde Manns Christ in the podcast.
Yeah.
And she's actually been to Wynn too.
Yeah.
And she talks about nature and grounding ourselves in nature.
Yeah.
You know, if you now go into the nature and sit with a tree and just breathe there, like you say, you need to breathe through it, or going barefoot across a meadow.
Yeah.
So maybe that would be an idea for Wynn in the future, you know,
getting us
out of the big hotel into something where that's actually for me, I go, that's my sort of current, how can I ground myself more in nature without sort of like being indoors all the time.
I know. And I had did this work in Greece last year. We were in a hotel. We were in Athens, but we were in on the side, like on the beach, and then that was very popular. We did walk on the beach, you know, and then in again. And I see that is I think the future, to have this combination. But I also think you have to, I think we can train ourselves in this building hope and building inspiration, because it is and therefore I believe some of these challenges are not only bad, in the sense when I think back of all these little challenges, but also somehow mini exercises in resilience, in endurance, as long as it doesn't get too hard, then you get totally burned out. And then, but I think, because I realized that many times I thought, oh, this is so hopeless, and then maybe then somebody calls you in that moment, or a butterfly flies by. So it is, that's why I'm so sure that, you know, developing your inner, your intuition, your sensitivity to see those little things is so helpful. And in this time of really big transition that we're finding ourselves in right now, what we can do is, again, back to this grounded, we had to stay grounded on earth and presence herself. Because if we fall into fear now, we had to cancel lots of events. We were going to do something in Singapore. I don't know if we get sponsors. So if I start being scared about tomorrow and the next day, then panic attack. And it's, you know. But on the other hand, if I am very present in the moment now, because we don't know, maybe something exciting happens tomorrow that somebody, you know. And I think this is also the time of now, is this thing of ground yourself in nature, on earth, and use your senses and be aware of where we are in this moment, you know, the butterfly, the fragrance, the phone call that's just coming a second after, all those little signs that can help you and train yourself that. And it's an exercise almost in finding hope in darkness, because this is also for many people a darker time, and at the same time it can be so many wonderful things. I have used this time to do a lot more yoga than normal, to do better walks, I just gave up we couldn't do events this spring, so we stopped, and now we started to do online things. We are transforming and we are changing and innovating. So yeah, it's good. But I think that I don't know if it's going to stop. So I think that for most people, that's an important skill to learn, to pick yourself up.
And I think the tips you gave, they are valuable. They're really valuable. And when we talked at the beginning, you know, you said also about, I mean, let's just name it. I mean, in the times of COVID, and we don't know exactly how it's going, and it's in constant up and down. When we look from very far away, we see the countries that are led by women globally. So we're talking New Zealand and Germany, and there was a third one which I
talked Norway.
Norway. Yeah, exactly.
Finland.
Doing better, or actually at least have done better in in working through this, in combating COVID. Now, if you could just talk a little bit about what do you think are the feminine skills that are helping those leaders to do maybe a little bit better than the male?
Yes, I think, and I think we can see it in some men too that care, let's say, but we have seen it typically in these women. And that was to put the people first. They put the people first. And of course, some will argue that, yeah, we put the economy first because without jobs, that will also make the people suffer. But I think the women, like I think in case of Norway, they really closed the country. You couldn't even get in here until 15th of July unless you were, or was it, or just the other week, I think, without being having a permanent residency or a Norwegian passport. And if so, you had to stay in quarantine for 10 days. So they were very, no, they had to open, of course. So, but I think the measures were immediately focused on the people and the young people and the old people. It's not like, oh, we don't need the old or any of those things. So I think this immediate care for the people first has been a good strategy, actually. And I think that will benefit the economies too. And I think there are other leaders too, males, that cared for the people, and those countries, even if they did bad in the beginning, have doing better over time. I saw the Norwegian Prime Minister, she went out to talk in kindergartens, she was all over. You see in Jacinta there in New Zealand, been doing amazing things. And so I think where women had or felt they had to copy men before, or copy that very competitive, goal setting, that any type of behavior in the past, I think now we're going to see that men will see that more caring approach of making and assuring, making some sort of a way to assure that people will be fine, you know, but they have to follow the rules and they have to do global distancing and everything. But it is this thing to talk to people, everybody in a country or in an area, and be able to communicate and be sincere and trustworthy, which has often been a problem with many people. I'm not saying that all women are trustworthy, maybe not, but I think research showing that women take a little less risk, and maybe because of that, or we want to make sure we do good things. And I think this time, whether a woman or man, it's a time where we must work on ourselves and be trustworthy. That's so important. Because with lying politicians, lying political leaders and companies too, I mean, now, because now it's coming out, one thing after another is coming out, when corporations, if they do unethical things, it's coming out, and everything is interconnected. So I think the time for a more for women leaders, or more balanced or feminine types leaders, is certainly now, and it's emerging, and it's becoming very obvious.
Now, with all your years of experience, imagine you have a 25, 28, 30-year-old woman in front of you who says, I want to be more involved. I want to be a leader. That book, Lean In, I want to do all of that and more. What would be 2-3 tips, suggestions out of your years of experience? What could she do to get there?
Yes, exactly. So I think I would highly recommend that she also work on finding her mission and purpose, and that she embarks on this journey, both from an internal and external point of view, meaning that we have inner journeys, which are the dragons and the obstacles within ourselves, right? And then there's the other ones, the outside ones, where we need to learn the new skills, where you need to build a network, where you need both. So I think for her, it both is important. And I would highly recommend that she participates in something like the WIN, which whether it's online or eventually when we'll meet again, because it's such a fast way to see role models, possible role models, or those you don't want to be too, that can also make you start doing your own thing. Attend workshops that you can work on yourself, both on those inner and the outer skills, and build a network and find mentors. And mentorship doesn't need to be something official or something. It can also be, oh, I met someone sitting next to me and she looked so inspiring. I'd like to learn from her. Mm-hmm. So I think that's important, because we see that when we are inspired, we do move mountains, and we are doing that together in particular. So it's about finding what really makes you come alive and lit you up. So if she's already excited about something, then I would say go do that, you know, if you don't know yet. Yeah. Then just go look, you know, 20, 25 years later, you have impacted on a lot of people. So that is important, actually. When I started too, there were many people, do you really want to do that? But there were a few who said, come on, do it, you know. And because of them, I dared to do it. So yeah. If I will talk to a young woman, I'll ask her, what is it you'd like to do? What's your dream? If she has one, I will say, go. If she's not clear yet, then, you know, spend time, try different things until you find something. Of course, people are different. Some people are more the supporting types and others are more the leading types. But all of us would lead our own life. And to do that with awareness and consciousness is very important. But you don't need to lead big, big projects. You can also support other people doing that. That's also noble work. So it's not like everybody needs to be the CEO, you know. Yeah. That's also sometimes a crazy life, because it's also a lot of responsibility. So,
And on top of that, not every CEO is a leader.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I like when Simon Sinek talks about leadership and what it takes to be a good leader. And he always says, you know, it's not necessarily the CEO that needs to be the leader. It can be the person in the team that holds the team together, that is the glue between everybody. Those quality that you mentioned earlier, you know, used collaboration, intuition, caring, caring. Maybe you're not officially a leader, but you are a leader.
Yeah. And this is exactly what I also have said many times. That person who glues everything needs to get all the attention too, because often in the traditional hierarchy, where the masculine qualities, not the male, but these are the young qualities, were the only ones permeated, you can risk that person is being laid off in a crisis, right? But that's the person who is creating context, and context is a very big focus, because it's like the Zen saying that you focus on the garden, because in the And you, as a leader, is a gardener. Your job is to take care of the garden so that all this variety of flowers can grow. Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Now, the end of my conversations is become a tradition to ask one question, and that is, which question would you have loved me to ask you? What needs strengthening, reinforcing, saying a second time, a third time, you know, what is unsaid?
I think maybe one thing which is a little bit about I was just thinking about one thing I wanted to say. I don't know what the question would be, but it is something about...
Well, you can just answer it.
So the time of change, in women and something. Because what I want to say is that what I have learned over this past couple of decades is that it isn't... The work is not about, let's wake up the men so that they understand that women are so good and now it's our time. No, what I realized to my despair and my frustration often was that women have also grown up in most countries in patriarchal or in the cultures where the values of male quality type work was given more value.
Okay.
So I realized even at WIN in the early days at evaluation forums, and they had male speakers, and all the women in the room always rated the male speakers as the best speakers. And then I saw again and again that or the most male-like women got bad, you know. So then I realized, and this is exactly what Michael Kimmel said, who's been speaking at WIN since the beginning of time, that the middle-aged white male is the objective truth. That is something, a belief that's in women as in men. Mm-hmm. So that's why our work, when I have been giving space to and in some ways been an activist for some of these more feminine qualities and put that on the agenda, a lot of women were also against that because they couldn't see it as the right way, because they only saw that other way as the right way. So the work of waking up people, women and men, to this different way of being present, of being in the whole of the dance between the feminine and the masculine within us, in companies and in political life, is not just about waking up the men, it's also about waking up the women, if I can say it this way. And then we wake up ourselves. I mean, so it's about these biases we all have, and to understand that these biases are often on automatically. So we have to catch yourself, and you have to actually create a way inside yourself to catch yourself. You see what I mean? So, because I consider myself very, very open, but according to my son, I'm not, because I was saying something the other day that apparently I was, not very open. So, and that's a possibility. So I need to say, or maybe. So we have to, so it's not easy, but I think, so it's about, I think this time is a good time to, for all of us to become more awake and more aware. And then also just get on with it and have a good laugh, and then that's important too, you know.
That's a nice way of finishing. You're not taking life too serious.
That's the thing, you know, because in joy we create, in inspiration we can make a lot of things happen, even if we make some mistakes. And I see that's also another thing. I've been perfectionist myself, and I see many young women, you know, they're so perfectionist, and often it comes because we have a belief, maybe I'm not enough, and you work harder and harder and harder, and it's like, no, you know, it's fine, go do it, you know. So it's also about that in this time, I think. When I see these overachieving young women who are overdoing it a little bit, so let's loosen up and dance.
That's nice, because we dance at WIN.
We dance at WIN.
We dance at WIN.
It's
creating an energy, and it's giving that that sensation. Everybody is okay. I mean,
everybody's okay.
Just the way we are.
That's the way we are. Someone said the other day that diversity is being asked to join the party, inclusion is being asked to dance. But equity or feeling of belonging is dance as if nobody was watching, even if, and that's what we do at WIN actually. So that's a very fun one.
Now, just to finish off, Christine, this year's planning, online, offline?
Online WIN.
WIN. So tell us when it is.
Yes. Okay. So it's an online conference with some hubs, if you want to. So it's on 30th September, 1st and 2nd of October, and it's with a base in Lausanne, in Switzerland. But we encourage, particularly the first day, if you to watch it together in a hub. That can be in a girlfriend's, invite seven girlfriends to your house. If it's safe to meet, you can also gather more people in a group, in your company or somewhere, and you can add on a local workshop, a little speaker panel, can be locally as well. But otherwise, even just to watch it together when it is safe, you can do that. We see that the COVID is coming and going, so we didn't dare to plan an in-person conference this year. But instead of canceling it, we are doing it online. And we tried a few smaller events and it worked and we are very excited.
And how can people register?
Yeah, so they can go on our website, www.winconference.net. So winconference is one word and it's .net. Otherwise, you just Google Win and so on. So then you can go there and sign up and become a part of it.
That's cool. I mean, I can personally say it's really one of those things. And for many women who I talk to, it's become sort of the annual go-to.
Yeah.
You know, it's like when I ask them, well, is it your first time? Oh, no, I've been like X number of times. And if I can make it, I go. So it's, I would really recommend it.
Oh, thank you.
To women. And also for men to listen in. Why not?
Yeah. They learn so much.
It's because, like you say, it's not about one or the other. It's about the collaboration. Inside the collaboration, I mean, I know my male and my female, they're having a constant battle with it.
Yeah, I know.
And on the outside. So I will link the conference homepage at the bottom of the podcast. So women and men are very welcome to register. And Christine, I thank you from the bottom of my heart. It's been great pleasure having you on the interview.
Very nice to talk to you also. Thank you.
Thank you.
You heard a production by Anja Förster. Copyright Anja Förster. Music by audionautics.com.